As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Well, Matt Barrows is at the Minneapolis airport. He was just down at his for the 49ers against the Vikings. Matt, how's it going out there in the land of... How many lakes do they have out there? 11,000, 10,000, a lot of thousands of lakes. How's it going?
I think it's 10,000. It's going well. There were a couple of lakes by the Vikings facility, and I got to tell you, that's the first thing that jumped out from these joint practices. The Vikings have a very sweet setup in Eagan, Minnesota. They bought out the old Northwest Airlines headquarters area. So there's a lot of land. And as you know, David, the 49ers practice on a pair of grass fields that aren't even 100 yards long. This place had four fields. It had a hotel. It had a museum, all sorts of film areas for everybody. So it was a pretty sweet setup out there.
That's awesome. It didn't look like it was too hot either. It looked like the temperature was what it should be around this time of the year. I saw it peaked at 80 or so. So it looked like it was decently comfortable for a good football practice. And obviously you don't want to go there too much later in the year because it's going to get really cold. But the setup looked cool. The weather looked good. And the 49ers put in two good days of work. It doesn't appear there are any major injuries. I guess you could always knock on wood if you call the 49ers. But Trey Sermon seemed to hobble off the practice field today based on one of the videos that I saw. But outside of that, nothing major reported. And now they can go into that preseason game on Saturday, supposedly resting a lot of their frontliners, right? Because they're in the midst of these three games in 13 days. And this is the second one. Then they have the dress rehearsal on Thursday. So there's such a small time frame in between games two and games three, Matt, that it seems to me that the 49ers will take it easy and give some of the bubble guys a shot to shine on Saturday.
I think so. I mean, on Wednesday, Kyle Shanahan sort of hedged and said, well, the plan is for Trey Lance and the starters not to play on Saturday, but we'll see how the next 2 days go. My sense is that they went as planned. Trey Lance got a lot of snaps. He didn't look fantastic. He didn't look bad. I would put it at a B plus even, 13 of 19 today, with one pick, but he just looked the part. He's looking more and more comfortable as training camp goes on. So I have to assume that Shanahan liked what he saw. He's not going to put Nick Bosa out there. He's not going to put Trent Williams out there. So my only question is, you have this offensive line. Mike McGlinchey is definitely not going to play. That lacks experience. So I don't know whether, even if Trey Lance doesn't play, whether Aaron Banks at left guard, Jake Brendel at center, Spencer Burford at right guard, Colton McKivitz at right tackle. I still think those guys could probably stand to get at least a series or two just because snaps are so... in demand for that group. So it may be a situation where Nate Sudfeld's a starter, but we do see some week one starters, especially along the offensive line.
All right, let's take it to our first question. By the way, those of you who are listening, you can queue up for a question using your app. And we have Peter B. waiting right now. Peter, what's going on?
Good morning from Sydney, Australia, Matt and nice. David. Thank you for this. My question is your opinion on the concerns of the O-line going into this season.
Well, it's a concern. I mean, that whole middle of the line is a concern. You're going from a couple of Pro Bowl caliber players in Laken Tomlinson and Alex Mack to a couple of unknowns in Jake Brendel and the two guards. So, you know, anytime you have that situation, it's a question mark. You know, the one positive that I can say in that is that these guys have taken a lot of snaps this summer. So, you know, they've been playing together. Aaron Banks has been playing next to Trent Williams. Jake Brendel is now getting all of the snaps at center because Daniel Punskill is out with a hamstring strain. And then the other, you know, positive I can say is that Spencer Burford has not been intimidated by the challenge. He has kind of taken it by the horns and has looked as good as you can expect from a fourth-round rookie there. So I think the future, especially at that right guard spot, is pretty bright. You know, the question is just how many hiccups we're going to expect from that line early in the season. And then, you know, you got hiccups in front of a quarterback who also is inexperienced. So it's a bit of a double whammy at those crucial spots. The 49ers seem to be ready for it, or at least willing to kind of suffer the slings and arrows of some early season jitters and hopefully get things going from the second half of the season onward.
Well, let's just look at how they did in their first try. And I thought that Aaron Banks and Jake Brendel were both very good against the Green Bay Packers in week one of the preseason. So that's significant to me. They didn't give up a single pressure, either of those guys. So Banks was good in pass protection. Brendel did a good job in pass protection. Brendel's really athletic, so he can execute the run blocks. That's not a worry with him. It's more about Kenny Anker against the pass when they start putting some of those big one techniques or, you know, even three techniques against them at the center position, because, you know, the NFC West is going to mix it up against the 49ers. Right guard was a little bit of a different story. I think that, you know, we saw Spencer Burford effective in the run game, but he gave up 5 pressures in the pass game. Now, when you put on the tape, it's not as bad as somebody like PFF might make it seem. I think PFF had like a 2.4 grade for Burford in pass blocking, which is almost impossibly bad, but you know, you would think that he would just be a turnstile on every down, and that wasn't the case. He got beat, yes, when Trey had a slide on that one play early. That was Burford's pressure. It wasn't a great rep. But, you know, when he got beat later on the other pressures that he gave up that PFF charged him for, he fought. It wasn't like he was just defeated and the defender went straight to the quarterback. He kept on fighting, and they weren't clean beats. And, you know, Kyle Shanahan has said it himself. You don't know what an offensive lineman really has until he gets his ass kicked. And then you turn around and see how he responds from getting his ass kicked. And if that was Spencer Burford getting his ass kicked, that's a good sign for the 49ers, because he didn't get his ass kicked that bad, right? And I thought he continued fighting throughout some of that contact. So the key is going to be the trajectory for Spencer Burford. You know there's going to be growing pains at the start. I think it was a big, big-time arrow up that Aaron Banks and Jake Brendel both look solid. And at that right tackle spot, if McGlinchey's not available, Colton McKivitt step up. He's going to step up. They're going to have depth this season, regardless of whether or not McGlinchey's ready fully, 100% full go week one, right now dealing with some of those knee issues. So O-line depth is going to be important regardless, and the 49ers are going to have to prove that they have it. Our second question is Daniel C. Daniel, what's going on?
Oh, how's it going, guys?
Hey, Daniel.
Doing great.
Hey, so with Hoka being picked up by the Cardinals, did you guys have any expectations of another team picking him up? And with him being what he is, most likely not going to make the 53-man roster for him. Do you think they're doing the old Seahawks thing of trying to get him for information and then cut him from there? Thanks.
Well, I just talked to Hoka about 5 minutes ago, and he said that it's a traditional H-back position that they have him at for the Cardinals. And I was wondering when Cliff Kingsbury picked him up, I'm like, Cliff doesn't use a fullback. That's an air raid out there. So I asked him, are you going to be playing tight end? What are you going to be doing over there? And it's going to be kind of an H-back spot where he's going to be doing, I think, obviously, a little bit more in the pass game than the 49ers would ask their fullbacks to do. At the very least, it's 2 weeks of a paycheck for Josh Hokit, the per diem for training camp or the preseason. And, yes, a little bit of intel for the Cardinals from the 49ers. But the issue he's going to run into is, are they going to be able to fit him onto the 53-man roster once they pare that down? And if they can't, then I do know for a fact that the 49ers are interested in bringing Josh Hokit back to their practice squad once those rosters are cut down. So, and that would just kind of be like a double cross situation, right? Where the 49ers would get some intel on the Cardinals when they get him back there. And they're like, oh, hey, Josh, welcome back to the practice squad. We know that you like playing with Kyle Juszczyk. We know you like that fullback position better than the H-back position they had in Arizona. So sign with our practice squad instead of theirs. So it's going to be funny how that maneuvers around, because the only way that he wouldn't be protected from coming back to the 49ers practice squad is if the Cardinals kept them on their 53-man rosters.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's hard to see an air raid team keeping a traditional fullback as much as anybody in this league on their 53-man roster throughout the season. So you're right. It is like some very smart espionage by the 49ers to cut him at this point, to allow him to kind of go out and seek information and then hopefully come back. He's been with this team for 2 seasons now, so he's the guy. Should Kyle Juszczyk go down, they would bring him off of the practice squad, and he would be part of that offense. And we know, David, that this is going to be very much a running team this year, maybe even more so than previous years, because they do have the inexperienced quarterback, and they need to protect him. And it just makes a lot of sense that this is a very, very much a traditional throwback team in terms of its run-pass ratio. Now they're gonna run in a lot of different creative ways, and we've been seeing that even in these joint practices against the Vikings. I don't know what the alternative would be if Hokit is on another team and Kyle Juszczyk goes down. Obviously, Ross Dwelly did that back in 2019. No guarantee that Ross Dwelly is on this 53-man roster for the 49ers, although I'm sure they could bring him off the practice squad. My point is that they don't really have anybody else like that. Charlie Warner would probably be the best one to sort of fill in at that fullback spot.
All right, let's go to Joe. Joe, how's it going?
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you, Dave and Matt. I was curious about Kinlaw and how much you're going to be able to use him. Is he going to be like an every down defensive lineman? Or is he? Are we going to have like a minute restriction on him, do you think? I saw him pancake that guy at practice the other day, and I got me super excited for him.
Yeah, he ran over Jesse Davis the other day, the left guard from Minnesota. Matt, what do you think? I think the 49ers are so deep that, it's tough to find an every down defensive lineman beyond Nick Bosa and Eric Armstead, just because they're going to be trying to operate in waves. But what's your take on that?
I mean, I feel like he's more capable of being an every down defensive lineman than he's ever been, just because he's, slimmed down quite a bit, or at least he's leaner. And is quicker, and then so you think that his pass rush ability is going to improve. I agree with David, and that's just not how this team is built. That's the reason why they were so effective today against Minnesota, is that it was just wave after wave of really quality players going against the Vikings. So even once the Vikings first string offensive line was out, it was still a sort of a high caliber defensive line going against them, against the backups, and it was quite effective. Those guys were on their heels all game. But I think it I think everybody is really optimistic about Javon Kinlaw, especially Javon Kinlaw. I mean, he's got a confidence about him that he probably didn't have in previous years, because his knee was bothering him so much. So I think arrows up on Javon Kinlaw. This should be the best season of his career so far.
And, you know, one of the really big pieces of good news for the 49ers is they don't need him to be a big sack guy. Anything that he gets sack-wise, I think, is icing on the cake. They need him to use that massive frame, push guys back, command some double teams. But they have a lot of sack guys in the D-line room. And, you know, just a couple sacks per year, I feel, would do the trick if everybody else is producing the way they should. They obviously deliver so much pressure off the edge, so the interior positions are there to set it up. And if he could be clogging that run, stuffing the run, not allowing teams to do what somebody like Detroit did against them in week one last year with a bunch of those gash runs in the first half, if you could stop that, and basically what you're doing is you're earning the right to rush the passer on the outside. You're setting up long down and distances for opposing offenses, and then you could pin your own ears back on the defensive line. So I think first and foremost, Kinlaw's duty is to set a strong backbone for the wide nine. It's a tough defensive tackle position to play because those linemen are so elongated up along the front that you have to be really athletic as defensive tackle. You have to take up a lot of space while you're also gobbling up the double teams, and you can't let those big gaps in there on first and 10 on those run situations. That's not a job that's going to get a whole lot of glory, but it's going to take a really good defensive tackle, and the 49ers hope that Kinlaw could be just that. All right, let's go to Lewis. How's it going, Lewis?
Hey, guys, how are you? Thanks for taking my, I don't know, it's not a call, but whatever this is. hey, David, I know you were joking last night on your video about the offensive line and how you seem to get fewer viewers, but I'm really interested in Laken Tomlinson leaving and Aaron Banks. Banks didn't play much last year, and when he did, he was sort of criticized for being a second-round draft pick and just not playing up to par. What do you see from Banks this season that makes you think that he could be that guy that replaces Laken?
Well, yeah, thanks for the question. It's a good one. I think the offensive line always should be talked about more. And, you know, in terms of Aaron Banks, he was a second-round pick for a reason, because he was big and he could move. You don't normally see – I mean, he was 338 at the Senior Bowl in 2021 heading up into the draft, yet he could still move. And the 49ers said, wow, well, we see some moldable play here. You don't normally see that kind of size-speed combination. You go back to, like, his high school basketball tape from the East Bay. He grew up over there in El Cerrito on the East Bay, and he wasn't just a big stiff in high school basketball. Actually had good footwork. So, I mean, that's the hope with Aaron Banks, is that you get an outside zone capable center at a size that's capable of really anchoring down in pass protection much more effectively than previous 49ers guards who had been rather light under Kyle Shanahan. So, I mean, that's not like Banks is a finished product, though, coming out of college. He still had to rework his body. He still had to cut some weight, but he didn't really cut all that much. He's at about 325 right now, so that's bigger than the typical Shanahan guard. I think he looks like he's in good shape, Matt, and I think the 49ers' hope is that they can have the best of both worlds with Aaron Banks.
Yeah, I mean, it seems that pass protection has been the big missing piece with him, and even this year, you see it in the one-on-one passing drills. He wasn't anchoring for some reason as well as he could. I don't know whether he was apprehensive about quickness. He seemed to get beat with quickness a lot last year as a rookie. And then this year, he was just being driven backwards. All of those guys have gotten better, certainly at that drill, as the training camp has gone on, and he's one of them. But it just kind of shows you that he's still finding his feet, if you will, when it comes to pass protection. And that's why, these joint practices, all the snaps that he's getting, he's gotten all of the reps at left guard this year. I wonder whether he's going to start in this game. I think he should. I don't know if it's just going to be too many reps in a row if he starts this game and then starts in Houston on the 25th in the preseason finale. But point being, this is just a guy. This is just a line, really, that needs all the snaps that it can get. Because as David noted, the tools are there. He should be good at all of it at some point. They just need to try to accelerate that learning curve.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, when you look at the tools up front, you could definitely see where the 49ers are aiming with this offensive line, what they envision. But the question is, how quickly will it be able to attain that potential? That's the big thing. And right now, you know, let's shift this back to Trey Lance, Matt, because he did have a higher escapability score last year than Jimmy Garoppolo, obviously in a smaller sample size. I think that's something the 49ers obviously expect from Trey Lance, right? They drafted a mobile quarterback for a reason because they said, okay, this guy's going to be a little bit more escapable, especially post-ACL tear Garoppolo. So I think part of their formula here is, okay, there might be some pressure, but we believe that Trey, you know, if there's X amount percentage higher pressure than there was in the past with Laken Tomlinson and Alex Mack there, you know, we believe that Trey Lance will have X percentage amount of increase in escapability over Jimmy Garoppolo to be able to make up for that. Now, you know, one thing though is you can't really escape from pressure right up the gut. There is no quarterback who could escape from immediate A-gap pressure. We saw this with Mahomes in the Super Bowl against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers a couple years back. It was hopeless. They scored 9 points against Tampa Bay in that game because there was pressure coming from everywhere. So one thing that really encouraged me about Trey Lance in week one of the preseason against the Green Bay Packers was the touchdown to Danny Gray. There wasn't great pass protection there by the tackles. Both tackles got backed up. You know, McKivitz at left tackle and Justin Skule, right tackle especially, he got beat by 55 there against the Packers. And because of that, Trey didn't, you know, have all day to throw. But he effectively stepped up in the pocket and he uncorked one, even though that the edges were collapsing on him. But there are two keys to that. The interior line held up on the play. So Banks held up on the play. Brendel held up on the play. Spencer Burford held up on the play. That doesn't happen, the 76-yard touchdown, if the interior linemen fold the same way that the tackles, McKivitz and Skule, did. And two, Danny Gray is so fast that Trey was able to release that ball 2.5 seconds after the snap. Most deep passes take 3 or more. They got that off in 2.5. So Danny Gray essentially turned suspect pass protection from the tackles into adequate pass protection. And to me, that might be the secret weapon, Matt. They've got enough of a speed threat out there to, you know, not necessarily run the deep pass each time, but to stretch the defense out to allow Trey to get the ball out a little bit quicker, create a softer secondary. I think that, you know, that was a great example, that touchdown to Danny Gray. I think that might be the 49ers formula to get around the fact that this offensive line will suffer some growing pains.
Throw to the fast guy. That was Trey Lance's quote. when it came to that play, and it was quite a feat by Danny Gray, because the cornerback was playing off coverage. I mean, the guy was 12 yards off the line of scrimmage, and Danny Gray was past him after a second and a half, it seemed like. So that's almost an obvious throw when you see a mismatch like that out there. And there was a nice one from Lance to Gray in 7-on-7 drills here in Minnesota on Wednesday. Perfectly thrown ball. Seems like Trey Lance is starting to find his rhythm with the speedster, and it seems like he's starting to find his rhythm with number 19 as well. I thought that was sort of one of the themes of these joint practices. He and Debo Samuel had a real connection going to the point where, you know, I think that they've erased or mostly erased whatever deficit they had, given Debo's little hold-in that he began camp with. When Trey Lance was in trouble, he looked to one of two guys. It was Debo Samuel and then George Kittle. So, and we already saw his rapport with Brandon Ayuk throughout the early part of training camp. So, that to me is a big deal. I mean, he's got three weapons that he's now getting more and more comfortable with. He's good on the broken plays. He's good in the move the ball stuff. David, you know well the stats from this summer. He's been much better, much more accurate, much more dangerous in those scenarios than he has the scripted plays. So I think that all bodes well for this season. And, you know, you don't want the line to collapse ever, of course. But that's going to happen. And you've got a guy that is showing more and more that he can deal with it. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be Patrick Mahomes level. I don't think it will ever be that level, but it's going to be at a better level than they had under Jimmy Garoppolo.
Well, you know, we didn't even mention this because I don't think that we're quite sure how the 49ers are going to play it because the preseason schedule is different this year. But we may be done with training camp. Last year, training camp was over with the final practice against the Chargers because last year the 49ers entered after the Chargers week 2 preseason game. They entered week 3, which was the dress rehearsal, and it was a Sunday game against the Raiders. So they actually played that week as if it were a normal week. Not just the Sunday was dress rehearsal. The week leading up to it was normal practice, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So now this time it's different, though, because they play the Texans on Thursday. So it's unclear if they're going to run a standard dress rehearsal week with the game being a Thursday game. I suppose it is possible, but maybe the 49ers will kind of still go with the camp style this week, especially since there's such a long layoff in between the Thursday game against the Texans and the season opener against the Bears, something like 17 days. So maybe they'll still be in training camp mode. But the reason I bring that up is because, yes, we do track training camp stats, and they're not advanced stats or anything. It's kind of simple completion rate with notes and stuff. But I think you could glean some stuff from that if you properly contextualize it and, you know, look at the different splits. And one thing that really stood out to me this year, Matt, was that Trey last year and moved the ball, which is the portion of practice that's like a game. It's scrimmage. You're actually getting plays and calling plays based on down and distance. You're adapting as you go, and you have to move the chains. Last year, Trey Lance completed only 48% of his passes and moved the ball, and that was very correlated with a lack of efficiency and moved the ball. The offense against the second team, I should add, wasn't very efficient with Trey Lance in his rookie season during training camp in those situations. This season, he was at a good 67% during move the ball. He was churning along, and the offense was much more efficient, and this was against the 49ers' first-team defense and, of course, against the first-team defense of the Minnesota Vikings here over the past 2 days. So I'm no, you know, expert on these statistics, but 48% to 67%, that's a sizable jump, in my opinion. And, you know, the main thing is, Matt, that I think it has reflected the eye test, right? Trey Lance seems way more comfortable. He actually seems like he knows what's going on. He had the deer in the headlights going last year during move the ball. Kyle Shanahan got very upset a couple times at a couple situational things that he just let go right over his head. It was moving too fast for him, and you would expect it to based on his lack of experience last year. But to me, he looks like he's in charge of the offense, and he's taken major strides here in 2022.
Yeah, last year he was better in the scripted portion of the practice than he was during move the ball. And this year it's totally reversed. And I think that the answer is that in the scripted portions last year as a rookie, he was getting a lot of help. He had Shanahan in his ear, you know, telling him where to go. You know, Shanahan knew what the defense was doing. I was told that, you know, that can be manipulated pretty easily by a coaching staff, especially by a savvy offensive coach like Shanahan. So, I mean, he was coming in. He was an inexperienced rookie, and you know, he needed help. And they were trying to build his confidence at that point as well. So, I think that's what you saw. Remember the first 10 days of training camp, he came out on fire. He looked like the second coming of Steve Young out there, and then all of a sudden he wasn't midway through training camp. And I think that's what happened. I think the water wings came off, if you will, and he had to swim by himself, and he struggled at first. And I think that's also exactly why Shanahan was so reluctant to play him a lot until he was forced to when Garoppolo hurt his calf early in the season. But, you know, back to the main point is that he looks far more comfortable in the water, if you will, now. And you saw that in these practices here in Minnesota. He was really good in the move the ball period. Like I said, he knew who to look for And not just, you know, I'm always going to look for Debo. He knew, you know, which of those guys was going to be in the right place in those moments. And that's exactly what Shanahan's looking for. I mean, Shanahan's going to be very hesitant with his praise, or sparse with his praise. But I think he has to have liked what he's seen from Lance in these last, I don't know, 5 or 6 practices.
Yeah, we're coming up on the year anniversary of that dress rehearsal week when the 49ers started doing all that quarterback shuffling going between Garoppolo and Lance. And, you know, this, it was really born in practice, Matt, the practice that's going to be next week at, you know, a year prior, before that Raiders game. And then, you know, we were watching it at practice and they were really working, spending time figuring out the play clock on the quarterback rotation. And then they used it in the game at the start of that Raiders game, and it worked really well. And of course, they also used it in the first touchdown drive of the season in week one. But it turns out, you know, people have their theories. Kyle Shanahan's had his explanation, you know, that he didn't like the rhythm that he lost play calling wise. But I think, to be honest, in retrospect, now that we know more about Trey Lance and his injury against the Raiders, you know, the 49ers obviously hid that and downplayed it, the chipped finger. You know, they made it sound like it was only a couple week thing and ended up being like almost a full season thing. How different would that offense have looked last year, do you think, if Trey Lance didn't get hurt against the Raiders in week three of the preseason? Because looking back on it, Matt, it was substantial, the work that the 49ers were putting in practice to, you know, complement Jimmy Garoppolo with Trey Lance. They were running to 2 QBs last year, and you can't tell me that they were doing it that aggressively just to, I mean, part of the benefit was obviously to get the Detroit Lions thinking in week one, but they were also that they would have been burning a lot of practice time just to confuse an inferior team. I do think that Kyle Shanahan was thinking a little bit more ambitiously with Trey Lance last year until he did break his finger against the Raiders.
Well, yeah, that's true. But then again, I forget how many snaps he got in Detroit. But he did get a handful, and they didn't seem all the worse for the wear. And that was obviously the closest game to that preseason finale last year. One day we'll find out. Maybe when Trey Lance, you know, is league MVP, Shanahan will do a retrospective of the 2021 offseason, and we can really learn what was going on behind the scenes. I agree with you, though. He was more hurt than anybody let on. To the point where he couldn't even straighten out that finger, and that led to an alteration of his throwing style, and that led to arm fatigue. It was one thing after another. I mean, that was the big worry about Trey Lance coming out of his rookie season. It wasn't, does he have the capacity to be a great quarterback? Can he be a great leader? The big worry was that this guy wasn't able to stay healthy through his rookie season. It was one thing after another, which made for a very choppy learning curve in year one. And so that was their biggest worry. And I think, I don't want to say that's behind them now, but he's taken a lot more snaps than he did last year already. He's about to go through 2 preseason games without being hurt, assuming that he doesn't play in this one against the Vikings. I think they were hoping last year or in January that was a fluke. And I think it probably is. It's just one bad luck thing after another. Lots of quarterbacks hit their hands on opposing helmets, and Trey Lance happened to have it in the third preseason games. But my sense is that he's not injury prone and that he's exactly what they thought he was going to be.
Well, that's like Kyle Shanahan loves the Guardian caps they're wearing at training camp. He didn't mention anything about concussions when somebody asked him about the extra pads that the linemen are having to wear. He said, this is protecting my quarterback's fingers because you could smash them on a helmet just like Trey did last year against the Raiders, right? There's just, you know, hands flying around, helmets flying around. So now everybody's got a pillow on their head that's rushing the passer. And who knows, maybe that did spare the 49ers during this preseason because Trey Lance was pressured a lot. You know, the questions that we got about the offensive line over the course of this show, they are all legitimate. That's something that, you know, in my opinion, I've really been impressed with the development of Trey Lance, not only from year one to year two, but throughout the course of training camp this year. I think he's weathered the ups and the downs. And to me, you know, a lot of quarterbacking is just seeing how much of a general that guy is out there. And I'm getting a good sense of leadership from Trey Lance. If, you know, if I'm appraising the 49ers, Trey Lance is not one of the positions I'm all that worried about. I think he's going to be at an acceptable floor for the 49ers this year if he gets decent pass protection. That's my one big qualifier. And that's why I continue pointing at the offensive line, because that's the only position group that I see, you know, that has tangible weakness, right? As far as both frontline talent and depth beyond that. But Matt, why don't we talk a little bit to finish this up about the 49ers defense? Because based on what I read, they really showed out in Minnesota with their front seven. Obviously, they were playing a lot of backup young defensive backs with injuries on in the secondary. So it appeared that Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen had theirs, but Nick Bosa seemed to help himself to more of a serving than anybody else in Minnesota. Some reports were saying six sacks for Nick on the second day of practice on Thursday. I saw some videos. The Vikings kept on trying to block him with a tight end, which didn't make any sense to me. But even when they put Christian Darrisaw against Nick Bosa, it didn't end up really well. I mean, he was just taking over. And this all kind of checks out with some of the conversations I've had. You know, when I interviewed Charles Omenihu last week, he said, you know, Nick had 15 and a half sacks coming off the ACL. He's going to get 20 this year. Like, everybody's talking about 20 sacks for Nick Bosa, and that might seem like a preposterous number to predict, but then you watch some of these practices, and he literally is unblockable. So was it the same from your vantage point today?
It was Bosa, mostly Bosa. It was Ebukam. It was Kamoko Touré. Drake Jackson had a nice pass rush where he knocked the ball out of Sean Mannion's hand. It was just, like I said, it was wave after wave of guys, and especially wave after wave of quality defensive ends. I thought that was that they really showed up. And I think it really was Fred Warner kind of setting the tone. I mean, Warner is now famous for getting under the skin of Brandon Ayuk and the 49ers offense early in camp. He gave the Vikings the same rendition today. I mean, that was sort of their mission, is to kind of take things a little bit beyond the line, get under their skin, and really kind of assert themselves, become the dominant force out there. And they were not on Wednesday. And I think that probably bothered Fred Warner. I wonder whether he was curious about this team, whether if he was able to push the right buttons, they could kind of lift their game up against Justin Jefferson, against Adam Thielen, without Charvarius Ward, without Jimmy Ward, without Emmanuel Mosley. Could they kind of win the day against a pretty talented team? Veteran quarterback, two excellent wide receivers, and a really good running back in Dalvin Cook, and they did. It wasn't a shutout. Jefferson might be one of the three best wide receivers in the league right now, and he had a couple of nice long receptions. But I think if you tallied it up, the 49ers would have won that matchup on that field. So I think that's, people have been, I've been wondering whether we've been carrying this, so the 49ers have the greatest defense we've seen in years and years, too far. But boy, I think Fred Warner took it out for a test drive today and like what he saw.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Yeah, and I think that early in camp, we saw this defense fully healthy, and we talk about the rush fueling the coverage. I think the 49ers really started to get the benefit this year of the coverage, you know, symbiotically fueling the rush. And, you know, with Jimmy Ward out, with Charvarius Ward out, with Emmanuel Mosley just now working back, not in the team stuff yet, that's going to be something that the 49ers probably won't have, right? You're probably going to be back to the old formula of relying predominantly on the pass rush again. But the good news is that it's not just the pass rush for the 49ers. It's the entire front seven. And there was a play today, you know, last time we talked to all of you, you know, on one of these Q&As, 49ers still had Darqueze Dennard, still had that nickelback, the veteran nickelback. Well, since then, they've obviously beaten the Packers in the preseason, and they, you know, did so behind two interceptions from the rookie, Samuel Womack. And, you know, I think that was a light bulb kind of moment because we talked about it the whole time. Dennard's here for a year at least, or at most a year for the 49ers because they want Samuel Womack to be the long-term plan. And I think that two things sped up that plan. One, Womack just having a hell of a week of practice last week and then having a hell of a game with those two interceptions. But two, Quantrez Knight, another rookie, really, really, you know, bringing his A game. And the 49ers were in a position where it wasn't just like, oh boy, Womack, you know, is ascending and he needs to start taking first team reps over Dennard. But it was also Quantrez Knight needs more time to play. And Dennard's still on this roster. We can't give it to him. So both of these young guys, Matt, have taken the next step for the 49ers. And I had the notice on Thursday that there was a play where Talanoa Hufanga lined up in that shark blitz spot close to the line of scrimmage, and he had an effective rush for a tackle for loss. So you could see what the 49ers' plan is at nickelback. They like Womack. I think they like Quantrez Knight as kind of even a more developmental option, and they love Talanoa Hufanga to line up close to the line of scrimmage to replicate what K'Wan Williams once brought this team as far as blitzing from that slot position.
Yeah, I talked to Adam Peters after the draft about who he liked as far as the undrafted guys, and one of the first guys he brought up was Quantrez Knight. And I thought it was because Peters is a UCLA guy,
yeah.
And Knight is a UCLA guy, so it was a Bruin watching the other Bruins back. But Quantrez Knight has been good, and Fred Warner talked about him today too, and the word he kept using was intelligence. And we saw that just in where he played. He was playing both safety, because they're light at safety right now with Jimmy Ward and Dante Johnson out, as well as the nickelback spot. And both of those are very, very cerebral spots. You have to know what everybody else is doing. It's just not instincts like some other positions are more of. But Fred's point was that when Quantrez Knight is out there and he's calling plays, he's calling those plays with conviction. He knows what is happening. That's what they like. I mean, it's all kind of the same theme. Very aggressive, confident team. And Warner, at least, is seeing that out of Quantrez Knight. I think the reason they moved on from Dennard is that it's a bunch of young guys at that position that they see as the future. At nickel and maybe some other spots, but obviously Womack is primary among those. Knight is second, and I think they really think that Diamador Lenore might be best at nickel when all is said and done, or at least is an option there, because he has the same traits as these other guys, and that's a real savviness and a real sense of aggression. Lenore is not afraid to mix it up. He actually almost got into a fight today, one of the few fights that we saw in these joint practices. But he's got a feistiness about him. His nickname is the Hyena, so he really embraces that, and it suits him. So, I mean, those three guys are all kind of cut from the same cloth, I think. You have to be a bit of a brawler to be a nickel cornerback. Almost a linebacker spot, and those three guys have it.
Well, with a nickname like the Hyena, you have to be a nickelback. The Shark, the Hyena, I mean, just predators, right? That's a position where aggression is so important, and you have to be physical in close quarters. And I'll tell you what, Diamador Lenore had a hell of a pass breakup today against Justin Jefferson in one-on-ones on a very nickel-like play. Jefferson ran a little crosser, and Lenore kept up with him. I saw people on Twitter, oh, that's a hold. It's like, no, stop it. There's no safety help. This is one-on-ones in practice. If you've ever seen one-on-ones at an NFL practice, guys are grabby. They don't throw flags in one-on-ones. And this wasn't even a grabby kind of play from D'Amador Lenore. This was, I mean, maybe a hand here, a hand there. But he came up and he wanted the point of catch, which is something that his, you know, counterpart from that 2021 draft class, Ambry Thomas, hasn't been doing all too often since joining the NFL. And by that, I mean, Lenore was in great position. Ambry Thomas is consistently in good position because he moves really well. He moves really smoothly. But when that ball actually, you know, hits the receiver's hands, that's when position, okay, is great, but you better do something with it. You better use your muscle. You better use your ball skills to either pick that ball off or knock it away. And we saw Ambry Thomas time and time again last year be in good position, but then just get out-muscled. And I think we've seen it a little bit here in camp, although he's gotten a little bit better. But Lenore, especially with Justin Jefferson, one of the best in the league, you don't expect a guy like Lenore, who's not even a starter on the 49ers, to win at the point of catch with Justin Jefferson. But I guess, Matt, we can finish up with this. He wanted the point of catch. Do you know the one-on-one I'm talking about? I don't know what part of the field you were on, but it was really impressive.
Yeah, I got a video of that, and I put it up on Twitter.
Oh, that was yours. That was your video, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it looked for all the world like Jefferson had him beat and he was going to get the catch. And you're right. I mean, it was just a really savvy play. And, you know, I think Lenore has been the better of the two. I mean, he's always going to be paired with Ambry Thomas because they came in the same draft class. They're very good friends, helping each other out to learn the ropes. Just like last year at this time, Lenore was ahead of Ambry Thomas. And then something happened, and we don't really know why. The coaches never really go into detail about why a guy slipped up or why he failed. But Lenore went down, and Ambry Thomas went up as the season went on. And then, of course, it was Ambry Thomas who had a starring role at the end of the season. Like I said, I mean, I think they really like what Lenore is made of. It's just a toughness about him. And it'll be interesting because we're not going to see Emmanuel Moseley. We're not going to see Charvarius Ward on Saturday in Minnesota. I wonder who the starters will be. Today it was Ambry Thomas and Ken Crawley, a veteran who's come in and played really well. And I wonder whether he's sort of a nice backstop. Certainly somebody that they could dial up if there are ever any real injury issues at that position. I think Thomas needs more snaps. I think they love to see both those guys get a lot of snaps. I wonder whether it could be the two second-year guys starting, Lenore and Ambry, in Minnesota.
It's going to be a lot of fun to track. Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining. Matt probably got to hop on a plane here pretty soon. So, Matt, thank you as well from doing this from the airport. And we'll talk to you all soon.